Morning, everybody. It's great to be here. I want to start with three pictures. Anybody know what this is? These are not just silos. These are silos of excellence. These represent all of you in the room from all your different walks of life doing amazing work inside your silos of excellence. Notice the impermeable barriers between the silos to keep everything in from spilling out. So this is what metaphorically what we're faced with in the health system in the U.S. are all these great people doing all these things but stuck in their silos of excellence. Here's another picture, view two, of how the ecosystem sort of kind of works, where you have health planning activities going on at the top. I've been working, among other places, in Central Oregon, in the Bend, Oregon area. Anyone ever been to Bend, Mount Bachelor? They counted how many required health planning, health improvement, health assessments they needed to do, and they realized that in that community of 85,000 people, they had to do 81 statutorily required health assessments, none of which were connected to each other, so that they could all, in their little silos of excellence, improve the health system in the communities. So you have these health planning activities theoretically informing these silos of funding, these funding silos, who all have different contract rules, payment models, performance measures, contracts with all the different providers of services in the healthcare ecosystem. So does this look anything like where you live and work? Probably. And what's interesting is that the payers are all telling the providers, you need to integrate. You need to provide whole person care, but this is the environment that the whole delivery system is stuck in. So I have one more picture. This is the California view of all the different players, where we have a whole bunch of different funders. We have a whole bunch of intermediaries, which are basically the funders slash purchasers give the money to the intermediaries, which give the money to the payers, which give the money to the providers, which are all stuck in, as you can see in that orange row, an uncoordinated system that results in, well, new layers of trauma for people with behavioral health disorders. So I like go to work every day and I go, well, how much am I contributing to the continued trauma for people that are theoretically the recipients of services, but they have to go in, like, because if they have five different needs, they have to go in five different doors and fill out five different applications and have five different care plans and five different care managers. And, well, okay, so you probably know about that. Whatever you do, you get to be subject to those silos of excellence. So we have this radical idea that we're working on in lots of places, including this project in California. Where did that picture come from? Okay, so those two guys represent the payers. And that's the kind of the status quo of the payers who are competing with each other, not wanting to talk to each other, busy telling all the folks in the delivery system that you need to integrate care, but this is what they're doing. And so this radical idea that we have is, what if we got the payers to work together in the same way we're expecting the providers to work together? Isn't that a radical idea? You see, I say that it's a radical idea because there aren't enough places around the country where where that very simple thought is getting actualized. And so part of what we're trying to do is support that. And because all healthcare is local, you have to start with how are the payers organized in the ecosystem. So, you know, we have this historical picture where we have managed care organizations for healthcare, health plans, MCOs. It used for a long time, it was just for TANF moms and kids who were on Medicaid because they were on welfare. And then we had fee-for-service models for the aged, blind, and disabled. And then we had a mental health carve-out, and then we had fee-for-service for drug and alcohol. So this was the picture in California where we had these, within the same Medicaid system, we had four different silos of funding, each with their own payers within that funding stream. We know that, and there's some places around the country where that still exists. So that is what is. I can't wave a magic wand and change those payers. So these are the folks, if your system looks anything like this, that need to come together and self-organize. We have emerging designs where managed care organizations, like in California and in Washington, everybody who's on Medicaid is being moved into managed care, and the dollars are being pushed down to these different health plans who are managing the health dollars. There's still the behavioral health carve-out, which means that there's the mental health and drug and alcohol that are in their own little version of managed care. But in this emerging model, there's a requirement for the health plans and the behavioral health plans to integrate with each other. So that's another sort of piece of the design that you have to... So I'm working in California, and there's one model. I'm working in Washington. There's another model. I'm working in Oregon. It's really important to think about who the payers are and how they're organized as I think about the next set of slides that are going to come. And we have this emerging design, which is actually starting to roll, which is rolled out in Oregon and starting, I'm from Seattle, so I do a lot of work in the West Coast, and going to be rolling out in Washington, where it's a fully integrated, the money is all being put into one bucket with a single management structure, theoretically supporting integrated care. But what's happening in a lot of places where all the money that was carved out is being carved into one health plan is all sorts of different variations, like health plans typically hire a behavioral health carve-out, so they carve in and then they carve it out. If that's Greek to you, don't worry about it, because it doesn't make any sense to anybody. But so let's talk about, I want to give you a couple pictures, a couple mental models of what happens when the payers come together to support integrated whole person care at the delivery system level. We'll know that we've arrived when we flipped what I call the resource allocation triangle. So look at this triangle. Do you notice it's kind of upside down? And do you notice that most of the money is at the top being spent on all things inpatient and institutional? So when I say institutional, I mean jails and nursing homes places where there are restricted environments or med-surg hospitals, psychiatric hospitals. And there's very little money for prevention, primary care, behavioral health. So what continues to stun me is that we spend $3 trillion a year on healthcare in this country, and most of it's stuck in, well, I would call this a picture of the sick care system. So we'll know that we've arrived when we flip the resource allocation triangle and we actually are spending more money in the green part. So I'm going to describe a little scenario where we have decreased demand in specialty and acute care systems, leading to increased funding for effective prevention, primary care, and behavioral health. So the model is really simple. You could call it a theory of change. You could call it a logic model. So we have our as-is state. Like, these slides are almost painfully simplistic, but the reality is there's all these people that are working on healthcare reform, that are moving all the boxes of the org chart and trying to move the money around, and not all of them are realizing that there's actually a set of key foundational pieces that they need to be tracking. So we have our as-is secure system where most of the money flows only after you get sick. What would happen if you were in a place like California or Oregon or Washington and you had a process where you had seed funding for what I'm calling transformational initiatives? And what that seed funding is used for is the deployment of high-impact primary, secondary, and tertiary prevention and patient engagement and health literacy initiatives. So you basically say, let's think about the people that are costing us the most money, and let's use some seed funding to wrap care around them so that we can starve the beast, interrupting the supply to the sick care system. So everybody, like that's, I guess, starving the beast, that's kind of a pejorative term. Is it kind of like? So I'm talking about keeping people away from preventable hospitalizations and preventable diagnostic imaging visits and preventable emergency room visits by wrapping care around them and actually improving the quality of their life. And what happens when you do these four simple things, starting with the status quo and finding some seed money and very selectively deploying high-impact strategies where you start with the folks that are most expensive, the folks where you can free up money, is you interrupt people going into those high-cost places. And then what happens if you wire the system properly is you make agreements in advance to say that money isn't going to go into shareholders' pockets of large for-profit health plans, but that money gets recycled back into the community, into the next wave of upstream innovation. So you actually free up money to do things like working on resilience trumps ACEs like they're doing in Walla Walla, Washington, or all sorts of other really amazing prevention, primary prevention activities that actually reduce the prevalence of mental health and substance use disorders, for example. And what happens is as you pursue this virtual cycle, you get to what I describe as the 2B state, where you actually achieve a health system that is a secure system, where you achieve an equilibrium of healthy individuals and healthy communities. So we're talking, so this project is just one little example of talking about spending more money further upstream, wiring that into the system so that you actually get the money going to where it needs to go. You start flipping the resource allocation triangle. So here's one little example. Let's see, there's a lot of numbers on this page, but I want to just say that over here, they spent, this is the state of Washington, they somehow, these researchers at the state just convinced the legislature to spend $51 million more on substance use disorder treatment. Okay? And what happened was, over 4 years, they actually saved, they have some really smart people in Washington, medical economists, they saved $107 million. $2 of savings for every dollar they spent. So what they're actually doing is bending the cost curve by following that logic model of pushing money further upstream. There's lots of examples. We've put together a business case for integrated care in California that has lots of good examples that you can go on the CIBHS website. We'll somehow put it up on the, maybe I'll write it on the wall there with my magic marker. And you can pull down this stuff, and we can make this information these slides available to you. So the sustainability plan is really quite simple. You organize for sustainability. I'm going to repeat myself to add a little bit more detail, and then we'll move on to the next speaker. You serve high-cost individuals. You track and analyze the health costs and utilization. You build the business case for getting that, for identifying the savings and recycling it back into the system. You become best friends with health plans serving your clients. You develop a hotspotting strategy. If that term isn't familiar to you, Google it and watch the 13-minute frontline video of Atul Gawande and Jeffrey Brenner. You develop tracking systems. You serve high-cost individuals successfully, rep and cure around those with high healthcare costs, and you become emergency room and hospital prevention systems. So a lot of really cool people that are working with really high-need folks are calling themselves, isn't that funny, they're calling themselves emergency room and hospital prevention systems. And then you track and analyze whether you're actually saving money and lowering inpatient utilization. And then you build the business case where you actually compute the actual and projected cost savings. You develop a return on investment analysis, and you pitch the business case. So what we've done in California is we've got the payers to the table to help us. Like if you talk to most health plans, I don't know if you know this, but most health plans' decisions are based on what actuaries tell them that they can and can't do. Do you know that little sort of secret? And so actuary, like I'm a CPA and we tell jokes about actuaries all the time, and they do the same about us. It's not very funny, but actuaries don't believe in cost offsets. Actuaries believe that if I come to you with a plan like this where we're going to save you money, they go, well, I'm not going to prove that unless, like, I have 99% probability that you're actually going to save money. So they always tell the health plan executives, any of these cool ideas are just cost adds because there's no guarantee that you're going to save money. So what we're doing in California is we're getting the mental health payers together with the health plan payers with the delivery system, and we're saying we don't want any of your money yet to the health plans. What we want you to do is participate in this experiment where we do the cool kind of stuff that they're going to talk about in just a sec, and then you help us track it. And if we end up saving money, we want you to like get really excited because it's saving you money, and if you have shareholders or nonprofit boards, it's actually going to make you look better. So we can help you, we can together help fix the healthcare system. So that's sort of the simple version of building the business case. But let me tell you, there's hundreds and hundreds of places around the country where they're doing quote healthcare reform and they're missing this very simple piece. And so I wanted to make sure that you sort of buried that into your brain, so that doesn't happen where you live. So we're going to go on now to Jennifer and then to Karen. And are you laughing because I took your pictures off the internet?
That and many other things.
Okay, so I'm going to let Jennifer work the slides. Do we have any questions or answers? I think we have a minute or two.
Does the room on the floor sit
the front? Oh, that would be like way too close. That'd be too much in my space. Sorry, yes. So she had an answer. Okay, great. Yes. Oh, that's a great question. So what's happened is that there's been these two learning collaboratives. We're in the second learning collaborative, and the learning collaboratives are made up of partnerships with county mental health and drug and alcohol systems. So take Fresno County or San Bernardino or any of the number of counties, and they put together a little team of the county system of the, in most cases, the federally qualified health center in that community, and the health plan. And all those folks have been getting together to do the stuff in my talk as well as the stuff in their talks. And so there's all these great little experiments going on. If you look at the map of California, it's like happening all over the states where all healthcare is local, local county systems are coming together. And part of what they're doing in these collaboratives is working on gathering data so that they can build the business case. Great. So, Jennifer, thank you for letting me talk at these folks.